I'm delighted now to welcome back to the show Ted Flicker. He is a sculptor, and his exhibition will be at the Goldleaf Framemakers on Alameda near St. Francis here in Santa Fe, starting tonight, Friday, June 4th, and running for a month. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hey, how are you?
It's wonderful to have you. Now, it's a funny thing, because we've had you on before as a filmmaker. You've had a distinguished and long career in improvisational theater and theater and TV and movies and now sculpture. Describe, if you don't mind, that switch from this incredibly communal, collaborative, kind of crazy world of making theatrical art or film to this very solitary or relatively solitary thing of making sculpture.
I don't know. Maybe I made a wrong choice when I was 18. I thought I wanted to be an actor. I thought I wanted to be Laurence Olivier. And I had a long, very interesting career in theater and films. But toward the end of it, I realized God never meant me to be an artistic collaborator. And I quit Hollywood in 79, came here, Santa Fe, and started writing books, very satisfactory, by myself. Wonderful experience. And one day I came off a book tour, and I was about to start writing another book, and I thought, you know, I always wanted to know about sculpture. And I went downtown, and I met this sculptor, Paul Moore. And I said, would you teach me? He said, sure, come tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And I went there, and he had some clay ready and a bunch of photographs of a decathlon champion whose portrait he was doing. And as he worked, he explained what he was doing to me. And after about an hour, he said, okay, let's go get the stuff. And we went to Artisans, and we got the clay and the sculpture table and a bunch of tools, and we went back to my house, and I had a woodworking shop. I always liked to work with my hands. And he handed me a plaster portrait he had done. He said, okay, copy this. I'll be back next Friday. I said, wait. I have to pay you for these? What do you charge for lessons? He said, oh, I don't charge for lessons. You have to give something back. I said, wait, hold on. It's obvious from the way you live you're not a well-to-do person, and I'm rich. For God's sakes, let me pay you for this. And he said, no, if I charged you, I'd have to charge my other students, and they can't afford it. So today we're best friends. It's 15 years later. We've been to Italy looking at sculpture together. He is still my master. And from that day to now, I haven't written a word.
Is that right?
Not a word. I mean, it's amazing, and I have no desire. I suppose if something happened and I couldn't sculpt, I would be happy writing books again. But God, I love being alone in my studio. No, not quite alone. I love being in my studio with young, beautiful, naked women.
At least you admit it.
Oh, God, what's not to admit it? It's a joy.
Well, there's so many pieces that go into being any kind of artist, being a sculptor in particular. You have to be able to understand human anatomy, the human form. Is that a gift that you always knew you had?
No. I can't draw for beans. Ask me to draw a hand or a face, I have no idea how to do it. But somehow, the minute I started pushing clay around, I knew that's what was meant for me for this third act of my life.
It's funny that you said a moment ago you thought that God never wanted you to be a collaborative artist. I was reading in one of your writings that at the age of 13, you made a challenge to God. You said, God, if you exist, reveal yourself. Well, he didn't. And you said, well, I guess he doesn't exist. As you have gotten older, where are you with the God thing?
Not as witty as Hitchens, but in the same place.
Meaning
there is no God. What there is a bunch of writings that are called sacred writings, the Torah, the New Testament, the Koran, and there's a ton of mythology out there. I mean, the Greeks had a whole bunch of gods, and the Romans had a whole bunch of gods, and the English worshipped trees. Now, finally, I started sculpting when I was 65. It took me about 12 or 14 years to figure out how to sculpt in a way that didn't offend me. And now that I think I know how to do it, I'm adding to it what I spent 50 years doing, telling stories. And so I've been re-examining Grecian myths, biblical myths, and I'm having a grand time. I seem to be offending some people and rendering other people gleeful. But it's great fun.
I mean, I guess I was asking about the God thing because you're exploring in so much depth these religious stories.
Parables. Most of the religious stories are a kind of mythological tale that are used as parables to explain a religious idea. For instance, I've done a piece of Jacob wrestling the angel. Well-known parable. The commentaries are unending on every one of these parables. Most of the commentaries on Jacob and the angel say that he's wrestling with a man. A magic man. Then some say he's an angel. Some say it's the angel Michael. And some say the angel Gabriel. And in one place, I found a mention that the angel could have been a woman. And since women are what I like most of all in life, I decided I would have a naked angel. And the reason, of course, is that she's trying to get away from him. He's holding her back for two reasons. A biblical reason is she can't leave till she renames him from Jacob, who was the trickster, who tricked his brother out of his patrimony, to Israel, the people. The other reason I decided was she represents his feminine self, and he isn't too anxious to let that go. So that's the piece I did. I'm doing, right now I'm doing the Annunciation.
Yeah, that's very interesting. This moment where the Virgin Mary is told that she's going to be
inseminated by God. Right. Well, what would any nice 14-year-old virgin think if an angel whispers in her ear, guess what? Well, I realized I looked at so many Renaissance paintings of that and some Pre-Raphaelite paintings of it. And the one thing I never saw on any of the virgins' faces was anything but placid. And I thought, no. What would that girl think? And fortunately, I have a model who is more muse than model. She's only in town occasionally, and when she is, she comes and works for me. Nikki Rosen. I think I'm going to put her name on this piece because she inspires so much of it. She has a kind of profound understanding of life. And I realized I could teach her some basic acting exercises in sense memory. And so she would take a pose that would indicate what the story is, but it would be just a pose. So I taught her to find the real feeling in her own life that would produce the emotion of the moment I wanted. And damned if she couldn't. And she could do it every time. She'd strike the pose, and we'd be just a pose, and then I'd say, okay, go there. And she'd go there, and the pose would be illuminated. Now, I just hope I can get that in the clay.
And so in this sculpture of the Annunciation, you have...
I'm doing this classically. I have the Archangel Gabriel with his wings and halo whispering in her ear. And the whole thing is about what's in her face and in the posture of her body. And I started to do a life-size portrait of it to get the feeling in the face. And I was going to do the piece half life-size, and which is I do fairly often. And I realized, I got to go for it, so I'm doing it life-size.
We're talking to artist, sculptor, filmmaker Ted Flicker. I suppose this is where the acting in film comes into the sculpture, is when you can teach somebody acting exercises to get the face you want.
Yeah, well, of course. I can't do that to every model I have. Some models are quite beautiful and quite athletic and have a great body sense, and they can take the pose I want. And then it becomes more my job to infuse it with life.
Right. It's a funny role for a woman to be a muse. I remember studying art history in college and thinking, there is nothing in life that I would like less than to be somebody's muse.
Mm. But why?
Because it was... How do I say this? To me, it was... I wanted to be on the other side of it. In other words, I wanted to be the one making... If I was going
to
be in that role at all, I'd
want to
be
the artist.
The one making the creative decisions.
Yeah.
And it seemed like it was a kind of powerless and passive role. But I know for the people who like it, they like it.
Of course. I think it's inspiriting for a woman to be a muse.
Is your wife your muse?
Has been from the moment I met her. And listen, I'd be dead without her. I mean, she has taken a very, very stressed life and turned it into a living art for us. She ain't bad, Barbara.
Now, not all of your sculptures are religious figures or parables or myths. Mm-hmm. You also do very creative and sometimes funny representations of people you know.
Yes, I do. I do. I started out doing portraits of the artists that Barbara and I collect. And I started out doing them as either gods or mythological characters. And now I have a part of our sculpture garden, which covers, I guess, about 5 acres now, called the Avenue of the Gods, which has a whole bunch of the artists that hang on our walls. Dan Domingo, Michael Burt, Carol Mothner, Jeff Lawrence, a whole bunch of them. Jeff is Perseus. Michael Burt is Cincinnatus. And Dan Domingo is Dan Domingo. What can you do with Dan? He's an elder, and that's what shows.
Right.
That's fun, and I'm continuing to do them. I've got a list of artists yet that I haven't done that I intend to do, and I do them in between these pieces.
And I suppose it's a tribute to them. Do they like it?
Some like it a lot. Others, I don't know. Maybe not. Everybody's polite.
You also did a sculpture of Barbara Van Cleve, the great horsewoman.
Yeah. Well, she's a great photographer. You know, she's a photographer of the West and a pal of mine. And as a matter of fact, we met riding out of the same barn, I don't know, 20 years ago. And she used to invite a bunch of us up to her ranch in Montana. They have two ranches up there, a very famous 2,000-acre dude ranch that's been there since the 20s, and the family home ranch, which is 20,000 acres, where they've been raising quarter horses for about 150 years. And so we'd go up with her every June, last week in June, and we'd gather the string of horses that have been out in the pasture all winter, and take them down to the dude ranch. And when they figured out we were going to the place where the grain was, they went at a dead run, and our job was to hold them together as a pack and get them there in one piece. Wildest riding I've ever done. It's like super fox hunting.
Right.
And that was fun. Barbara's is a great, great horsewoman. I met her first because I saw a photograph in a gallery she had done, and I bought it, and I wanted to meet the photographer. She's a great photographer, good woman.
And you portrayed her horse as a unicorn.
Yeah, because she is a woman of a certain age and utterly innocent, sweet, innocent woman, not an evil thought in her body. Pretty good for a cowgirl.
We're talking to Ted Flicker. There's also a story that you tell of, I think it was one of the first sculptures, one of the early sculptures that you did, which was an Adam and Eve. And it was inspired not by Bible reading, but by these two young people,
oh,
about
God,
20 years old, who posed for you, and you saw in them also a kind of innocence that you equated to Adam and Eve.
These kids, he worked for me. They're both young art students. He was 20, she was 19. And he had worked for me one summer as an assistant in my studio, and a nice kid. And they came to pose for me, and they were lovers. And I said, okay, get your clothes off, get up on the model stand, let me have a look. They got up there, they turned to face me, waiting for instructions. And I said, oh my God, that's pure innocence. Look at those two kids. They're so beautiful. So incredibly innocent. I said to her, go ahead, kiss them. And she kissed them, they fell into a pose in the kiss. And I made them hold it, and I grabbed some clay, and I did a sketch of it, and it's a piece I call The First Kiss. It's so innocent, so sweet. Yeah, it's fun.
You work in different media within sculpture.
Well, yes and no. I do all of my sculpting in clay. I model. I've done some wood carving. I like that. That's fun. And then I cast it either in bronze, and lately I've been using this modern high-tech material, a polymer, that lives outside as good as bronze, and I can color it in the mix when I put it together, and it's non-toxic, and the casting can take place and does take place at my own studio. My assistant, Brandy Peña Villa, does all the casting herself. She cast a 9-foot piece for me by herself. So, and it costs about a tenth of bronze.
Is that right? So yeah. This polymer, you can make it look like anything you want.
Including bronze if I wanted. Yeah.
Very interesting. Now, you've been working, because you started this whole artistic sculpture process later in life, and because you didn't need to survive doing it, you've really had the freedom to work entirely outside the art market system.
Yeah. Well, Listen, after 50 years in showbiz, I needed to do some art that was totally disconnected from commerce. So when I started, I said, well, I'm not going to sell this stuff. I don't want a gallery. I don't want an agent. I just want to do my work. And occasionally, somebody I knew would see the work and say, oh, I want that. And if I liked them, I said, yeah, you can have it. And occasionally, I would want to do a piece for somebody, but then I would give it to them.
Right.
But and now, I'm turning 80, the weekend of my first ever show.
This is your first ever show?
Yeah. And I'm only having the show because my pal Marty Horwitz of the Gold Leaf Framers and the Gold Leaf Gallery said, I want to give you a show. And I said, oh, okay, why not? I'm old enough. And so we're doing this show at his gallery. I'm going to have 12 pieces there, from very large to very small. And a number of them are my current work of the parables. I have a huge piece of the parable of Judith and Holofernes. You may recall Holofernes was an Assyrian general who was marching with 120,000 troops to yet again destroy the Jews. And he invested this small city on his way to Jerusalem. And the city fathers, terrified, went to the most beautiful woman in the city, who fortunately was a widow, so she knew about sex. And they prevailed upon her to go down to the camp and to use her womanly wiles to get Holofernes drunk and have sex with him till he collapsed with fatigue and then cut his head off. And the Renaissance, of course, that was a favorite subject.
Indeed.
My favorite is the Caravaggio. And so I did it, and it's, I love it. Everybody, as a matter of fact, two of my friends who have seen it, you know Malka Trucker, my pal Rabbi Malka
yeah.
Trucker. Malka and Gay Block, her friend. And Gay is involved with the Jewish Museum in New York. Want to get it placed there. Well, needless to say, that would please me.
So that, if you were sort of following the career path, that would be the next step. But that's, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Hey, at 80, what do I care? I mean, I care. I would love people to see the work I love. But the most important thing is I get to the studio every morning and do it.
And that's your work, and you are healthy and vital and full of creativity as you've always been. And congratulations on your 80th birthday and on your upcoming show.
Thanks, sweetheart.
The show is at the Gold Leaf Framemakers of Santa Fe. It's on Alameda near St. Francis, and it opens today, the 4th of June at 5 o'clock, Ted Flicker's sculpture exhibit. For more information, you can go to tedflicker.com, and you can also call James Rutherford at 204-6034. Wonderful to have you, and we'll see you there. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.